a city getting raves for its hosting of the RNC this week. And today, the party's candidate gave himself some raves, too.
This was probably one of the most peaceful, one of the most beautiful, one of the most love-filled conventions in the history of conventions.
The GOP did seem to achieve unity by the end of the week, although today Trump picked up his fight with Ted Cruz. Last night, Donald Trump spoke for 75 minutes and delivered one of the longest acceptance speeches in recent times.
My message is that things have to change, and they have to change right now.
Well, another superlative last night, Ivanka Trump, who received a lot of credit for her speech introducing her father.
For more than a year, Donald Trump has been the people's champion. And tonight, he is the people's nominee.
Well, joining us for a look at the week at the RNC and a preview of the Democrats' convention next week in Philadelphia are Rick Klein, political director at ABC. Rick was in Cleveland all week, but he's back in Washington today. Hi there, Rick.
Great to be with you.
Hi, Rick. And we also have Sarah Wheaton, White House reporter for Politico. She's here with me in Cleveland at WCPN. Good to see you too, Sarah.
Great to be here.
And I want to start with Sarah. Rick Amigna, we're all, you know, some people are scratching their heads. Why would Donald Trump start today? Yes, he talked about the convention. He spoke to the volunteers this morning. But why would he repick at that battle with Ted Cruz? He said, I don't want his endorsement.
Well, a big part of Trump's message is actually running against the naysayers. He brought it up again in his speech last night. He said, nobody expected me to be here. And isn't it great that we beat all those guys who said that I couldn't win? And the reality is that people who study politics still think that he can't win the general election. So beating that very widespread expectation is important for him. And so Cruz, who refused to endorse him, is still a helpful foil in being a longtime naysayer who just refuses to get on board the Trump train. And so continuing to push against him and make sure that Cruz doesn't benefit politically from taking what Cruz is casting as a principled stand is important for Trump.
Well, and just, Rick, I just want your opinion on this. We'll move on to other things. But some people think that whole moment this week when Ted Cruz did not endorse Donald Trump, and there's a chorus of boos, and then suddenly there's Donald Trump coming in from the rafters, sort of godlike. You know, that the Trump campaign knew that he wasn't going to, people in the event knew that Cruz was not going to endorse because there was a big teleprompter and they could see the speech and they could see there wasn't going to be an endorsement. And that was to Trump's benefit to kind of have him booed off the stage. But why is he talking about Cruz and not Hillary Clinton?
They knew what he was going to say. They didn't know how it would be received. That was an organic moment. The Cruz folks were even taken aback by the reaction that happened right now. What I'm curious about, as you say, is why the next day you'd start refighting primary battles. I don't know any history of that. All I can think is that Trump's a fighter. His instinct is to punch and punch hard, and he's got under his skin. And he also thinks that when he's on offense, even if it's against foes he's already beaten, that's a better thing, that it projects a certain amount of strength that he thinks his voters respond to. But as a matter of political strategy, it is nonsensical. It is off of the map of normal political discourse to think that you're right after you try to unite the party at your own convention, you go back to the guy that you beat 3 months ago.
Right. Well, especially because we heard him on such powerful offense, Rick, to use your words, last night in his speech. I mean, of course, he focused on law and order, he focused on immigration, and he definitely, you know, he was the capstone of a week of the Republicans going after Hillary Clinton. So let's listen to what Trump said last night.
In 2009, pre-Hillary, ISIS was not even on the map. Libya was stable. Egypt was peaceful. Iraq was seeing and really a big, big reduction in violence. Iran was being choked by sanctions. Syria was somewhat under control. After 4 years of Hillary Clinton, what do we have?
Sarah Wheaton, you want to fact check some of that?
Well, I think that what Clinton, I think that what Clinton and President Obama would both say is that the process for the disorder that is happening in the Middle East got started in the Bush administration, and Trump has been sort of back and forth on whether he actually supported some of those moves. His early comments back in the early 2000s, where he sort of gently supported both the invasions of Iraq and Libya. And then more, as it became clear to everybody that it wasn't going well, he also said it wasn't going well.
Well, and you know, you could say that things are not going well, and there's plenty to criticize. But Rick Klein, the seeds of ISIS were born in something like 2004.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the idea that at the end of the Bush administration, you had a wave of peace washing over the Middle East and the world is revisionist history. It's just not true. It's just not the case. And you can lay lots of blame at decisions made by the Obama administration. But to suggest that they're singularly responsible for the rise of ISIS and instability in the Middle East is just not the case.
But how do you think Sarah's going to sorry, Robin. I'm just curious what you think about how Monday is the beginning of the Democrats' chance to respond to what we all heard this week. I mean, how do you think they might do that?
Well, I think that Clinton will be pointing to her long experience with diplomacy. She can say that Trump will basically just sow more disorder in the world. He's made some comments suggesting that the U.S. is not going to stick to its commitments to our NATO allies, which has been a very strong alliance since World War II. He's made some comments about ending the U.S.'s nuclear protection of countries in near North Korea. So he's saying, maybe we should let the Japanese and the South Koreans get their own nuclear weapons. So she can say, if you're concerned about the world spinning into disorder, Trump is only going to make that even worse.
Well, and Rick Klein, didn't he maybe add to that narrative and the GOP add to that narrative this week? Because the whole narrative of the week was Armageddon. We spoke to the historian Jill Lepore yesterday, and she said, you know, there has to be a pivot. There has to be a pivot to, yes, things are awful, but here's what I'm going to do that will make it better. And I'm not sure we ever heard that pivot.
Well, the pivot today is beating up Ted Cruz. So did not. There's no scenario where that was an optimistic, uplifting speech. As far as I listened to that, it was a parade of horribles. It was a grim portrait of life in America today. Now, keep in mind, you've got something like 2/3 of voters who think that America's on the wrong track. He's not speaking to nobody here. But I think the pessimistic vision of things today, and then the prescription that only Donald Trump is the one that can save the country from it. That's the gamble. That's the calculation. And we just don't know if it's going to be a winning one.
Hmm. Well, Robin, do you want to go to Ivanka or Peter Thiel? Because I want to hear.
Ivanka. Okay. Because I want to know what people think about the hashtag. And we'll start here in the studio, Sarah. The hashtag Ivanka for president. I mean, composed, serene. Your thoughts?
She's very classy. What Trump has seen as sort of gauche with all the gold plating and everything, where she's sort of graceful, measured. And she was also clearly trying to go after a group that Trump has pretty consistently alienated, women. She talked about trying to get equal pay in the workplace. She talked about trying to get better maternity policies. I definitely was wondering what the people I deal with regularly in the White House who have been pushing basically since the Obama administration to get those types of policies. They don't feel like they've been getting help from Congress. So it was interesting to hear the Republican nominee's daughter come out and say that he's going to help women in the workplace.
Well, she said one other thing, Rick, which was interesting. I know she's trying to get the millennial vote for her father. But she said, well, you know, I don't see myself. I'm one of those millennials that doesn't see myself as a Republican or a Democrat. There are some people in that room who you could almost hear gasps, you know, wait a minute. No, we are hardcore Republican. Talk about that for a second.
For that room, you're definitely right, although they're same thing with equal pay. I mean, they were chanting lock her up in that room this week. They weren't chanting equal pay. There's a reason for that. I do think, though, Ivanka had almost the mirror image of Donald Trump's speech, of her father's speech. That was an optimistic vision of Trumpism. And make no mistake, we're not talking about conservatism anymore. It is Trumpism. It's around the personality of Trump. But one potential area for it to resonate with voters, another generation of voters perhaps, is to talk about it in the terms that Ivanka Trump did and Peter Thiel did. And it was a more inclusive, forward-looking party that didn't emphasize social issues like abortion and gay rights and was talking
called it
about
a distraction, in fact.
That's right, even that. And was talking about an empowerment for a new generation.
Well, Rick,
you mentioned Peter Thiel, and he's the one who said, you know, announced that he was gay and the first ever at a Republican convention to do that. But he also said, oh, things like the who uses what bathroom, who cares? Well, Mike Pence does, the VP.
That's a great point. And that is maybe the underbelly to this choice that Donald Trump had. I mean, we're left trying to explain a lot of inexplicable things at the end of this week, because it's hard to square some of the decisions and the choices and the messaging with any conventional way of thinking about a campaign. But it really is as if we're used to covering checkers and he's playing a video game that didn't even know was invented yet. He has broken the model of how you campaign for president.
Well, Rick Klein and Sarah, I got to tell you, Sarah Wheaton, White House reporter for Politico, Rick Klein, ABC. Just real quick, Sarah, your thoughts. We only have a few seconds here. What a week.
Yeah, I think it's still not clear if he has achieved the unity that he needs, and it's going to be hard for him to keep shoring that up while also reaching out to new voters.
And Rick?
I just am stunned by every piece of it, not least that I thought the showman would put on a better show. It was a chaotic, meandering week, and I don't know what the exclamation point is to this on this run-on sentence.
Well, and we got another week ahead of us. We will talk to you then when we get to Philadelphia. But it's really been quite something on a lot of levels. Rick Klein, political director, ABC News. Sarah Wheaton, White House reporter at Politico. Meghna Chakrabarty there in Boston. Robin Young here. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.